Julian Moore couldn't save it. Whoa, Jordan Poole. These two teams still shuffling for seeding. Robinson. Credit Mo Wagner with getting on the ground, and that leads to Jordan Poole.
Beeline is making Penn State think, and they're thinking well.
Abdul Rahman. Bad pass off the inbounds, and Xavier Simpson takes advantage as Michigan comes in and gets a big road win at Penn State.
First shooter for the United States, T.G. Marvin, scores! And the pride of War Road, Minnesota, puts it to the back of the net. Augusta shoots, scores! Yahoo, deeps, and scores! That's the Peter Forsberg move. He's in the building, Pierre. Amanda Kessel for the United States. Zabados cuts down the angle. Kessel scores! We go round by round. Jocelyn Lamoureux. Two goals apiece in the shootout. Lamoureux moving in on Zabados. She beats and scores! Must beat Rooney to keep Canada's hopes alive. She is stuck! The United States wins gold in Pyeongchang!
This is a fan issue. Okay, our research shows it. Our broadcasters have done their own research. Their research is wholly supported. The number one thing that fans, avid, casual, identify about the game that they'd like to see change is an improvement in pace of play. And at the end of the day, we need to make all the constituencies in the game understand that pace of play is about the fans. And it's the fans that drive the engine that's Major League Baseball. I'm not sure that fines would be the penalty. Usually when a player disregards an umpire's direction, ejection is the more likely course of events there. I really have come to dislike the word tanking. I must tell you, our game has always been cyclical. I truly believe that all 30 of our franchises have a plan to win. And not everybody's going to win every year, and sometimes people realize that their plan, it may be a year away, it may be 2 years away, but everybody's out there trying to win. And I think it's a question of timing, and I think that the cycles that have always existed in baseball continue to exist today.
I think our league has been built the right way as far as when it comes to the postseason. It just changes the landscape of the history of the game. If you start messing with seedings, the playoffs, then you start talking about, well, this team would have played this Western Conference team, what he would have, you know. So it's cool to mess around with an All-Star game. You know, we can, and we proved that you could do that, but let's not get too crazy about the playoffs.
He could legitimately have this opinion, but if he does and he wants to espouse it when asked about it, I think he really has to at least give a wink and a nod to the fact that the East is easier.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know what? Forget the wink and a nod, Kellerman. LeBron James needs to just come out and admit it. Dude wants no part of the Western Conference. Dude has never wanted a part of the Western Conference in his career. I mean, go back to 2010 when he went to Miami. Was it strategic in that it was his buddy Dwayne and they were going to put their little three amigos together with Bosch? Yeah. But it was also the fact that it was in the East. He didn't want no part of the West. And when he left Miami, I'm coming home. I can't even sing that song because I can't stand it. I'm coming home. Nonsense. Because he wasn't going anywhere but staying in the East. And if he left Cleveland after this season ends and he's a free agent, I promise you, he'll go to Washington, he'll go to Philly, he'll go someplace else before he'll go deal with the meat grinder that is the far superior Western Conference. Of course he wants the playoff format to stay the way it is. And it's with that I welcome you to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We got Toledo's sports leader. Yeah, let's talk about this. We've got open phone lines in the first hour. We've got a couple of really good guests we're going to talk to in the second hour. You want to get in, this is the time to do it, 866-240-1065 on anything or all that you have already heard in the montage. But I've got a lot of things to set up for you as well. 866-240-1065. Apologies. I hope the coughing fit doesn't start again. I told Cushlin I was feeling a lot better today. We should be good to go. But if the coughing fit comes back, Cush may have to take over. All right. But yeah, you just heard LeBron James. If you didn't hear that part of the montage, LeBron James was asked amidst bouncing basketballs, because what better place to do player interviews than in the gym that has echoes of every ball bouncing? It just does wonderfully for the broadcast media. Print journalists could care less. Broadcast media has to deal with that, and it's awful. But he was asked amidst the bouncing balls at practice, what about Adam Silver's idea of changing the playoff seeding in the NBA from the top eight teams being seeded 1-8 in the East, 1-8 in the West, and the winner of each of those little mini tournaments plays in the finals? What about seeding everybody 1-16 and thereby having Eastern or Western Conference teams match up wherever they match up according to the seedings at any round of the playoffs, so that the best two teams get to the finals rather than just the best team from each side? LeBron James doesn't like it at all.
Our league has been built the right way as far as when it comes to the postseason. It just changes the landscape of the history of the game. If you start messing with seedings, the playoffs, then you start talking about, well, if this team would have played this Western Conference team, what he would have, you know. So it's cool to mess around with an all-star game. You know, we can, and we proved that you could do that, but let's not get too crazy about the playoffs.
It's okay to mess around with the all-star game, he said, which they did. And hopefully they'll tweak a little bit more next year, including by having the draft on TV, and I think they've already announced that. But he said you can't mess with the playoffs because of the history of the game. What history? What history? Do you have any idea, LeBron? And I know he does. This is just his cover. This is his way out of this part of the argument. He is a student of the game. He is a student of the history of the game. LeBron James knows him some NBA history. Absolutely he does. He could probably tell you champions from 1970, 71, 72, and on down the line before he was born. No doubt in my mind. So he knows his history. And because he knows his history, he knows he can't rely on the, hey, you know what, we're messing with the traditions and history of the game. Jim, you and I talked about this yesterday.
Yeah.
The NBA used to be two divisions in each conference.
Just, once upon a time, many moons ago.
And then they expanded it. Now they have multiple divisions, three in each conference.
Right.
Then they used to have best three out. In fact, they used to have miniseries in the playoffs, best two out of three.
Yeah,
in the first
teams
round.
Used to get by to the current conference semifinals if you won a division, for example.
That's right. But in the when the expanded playoffs happened, they had a miniseries, best two out of three. And
yep.
Then they said, no, that's not enough. Got to be best three out of five.
And that's when everybody had to start in the current first round. That was like 83 or 84 or something.
And then they decided, no, best three out of five isn't enough. We need to milk this for more revenue. We need more games. Let's go best four out of seven in every single round. As Trey Wingo said this morning on Golic and Wingo, you know, Moses Malone back in 1983 famously predicted he would do his Sixers and Dr. J's Sixers would win the NBA championship going into the playoffs, fo-fo-fo. He predicted 3-4 game sweeps in a row. Fo, fo, fo. Turns out they needed an extra one against Milwaukee in the conference finals, so it was fo, five, fo. But the point is, fo, fo, fo was only 12.
Right.
Now you need fo, 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 fo. You got to win 16 games.
Yeah, if you pull off Moses Malone, you only get to the NBA finals. See,
that's
the
right.
Warriors, who last year were the only team ever to pull that one off, by
right
the by.
On. So if you think about it, from that vantage point, the playoffs have been changed multiple times in the last, you know, two decades. So what's LeBron talking about? You're messing with the history of the... No, let's be honest. Let's say the truth, LeBron. The reason you would never even think about free agent signing in the West is because you have a cakewalk to your, what would this be, eighth or ninth straight finals when you stay in the East.
It'd be eighth.
If you're the best player in the East, and you are a player of LeBron's caliber, and you just have a couple of decent surrounding parts, the way he did in Miami, the
right.
way he has with the Cavs since he's been back. You know, he had Wade and Bosch, and shooters like Ray Allen. And then he came back here, and he had Love and Irving right from the get-go, and shooters like JR, and pieces and parts. Not always good enough to win an NBA title, but sure as hell enough to come out of the East. And you can say, this man, it would be like saying somebody went to eight straight Super Bowls. Won three of them. Fantastic. But you can't do that when you're in the West. Tim Duncan is one of the greatest players of his era and of all time. But he only won five NBA championships, or I shouldn't say only, he won five NBA championships, and he didn't get to the finals as often as LeBron James does.
Six total, if I'm not mistaken, because they only lost that one to Miami.
Kobe Bryant, one of the greatest players of all time, one of the top ten. How many finals did he make?
Seven. One, I believe, seven.
Sure, hell, never seven in a row.
Right.
I mean, you know, Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant had to fight through the Golden State Warriors. He had to fight through the Los Angeles Clippers, a good team. We're talking about just in recent years when he was with Oklahoma City. He had to fight through the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili had to fight through all of the above as well. It was way high. In other words, nobody is going to seven straight finals from the West. The West is too deep. It's too talented. It's too hard. And that's why LeBron likes the NBA playoff format, with just the East being seeded against itself and wanting nothing to do with the West, because he can cruise control his way to yet another finals, adding to the legacy. And if he wins another one, of course, now he's made it to, you know, eight finals and four victories, he's 3-5 now, right?
Yes.
So he would win and be 4-5 in nine finals.
Right.
Total overall, going back to the 06 one as well. So, let's just be honest. And Kellerman tried to call him out a little bit, but Kellerman doesn't like speaking bad about LeBron because he's the LeBron sycophant. He does. He's a suck-up, and LeBron can do no wrong. So, you know, he calls you just give a little wink and a nod. You know?
He could legitimately have this opinion, but if he does and he wants to espouse it when asked about it, I think he really has to at least give a wink and a nod to the fact that the East is easier.
Yeah, just come out and say, LeBron, you're fooling nobody. You don't want anything to do with having to play, I don't know, the Grizzlies in the second round, or the blah, blah, blah. And I'm just picking teams that have been really good playoff teams that did not go into the finals from the West in recent years.
Clippers would be one,
the
certainly.
Clippers, yeah. You don't want to have to play the Spurs in the second round. You don't want to have to play Oklahoma City, current version of, with Russell Westbrook and Paul George and Carmelo. You don't want to have to do that early on. You only want to face them if they happen to somehow knock off the Warriors when you get to the finals. You just want your easy ticket punch to the finals, and that's just what LeBron is all about. Oh, my goodness gracious. He gives me something to go off on almost every day. LeBron James and the Cavaliers return to the court tonight, as do many NBA teams, as the second half of the season officially gets underway. It's talk about a really disjointed quote-unquote half. The Cavaliers have played, what, 56 games thus far? Pistons, a similar number. That's a lot more than 41, which would be literally the halfway point of an NBA season. But we call it that because of the All-Star break. And the second half officially gets underway tonight with the Cavaliers taking on Washington, I believe it is.
Yep.
And what are the Pistons?
The Pistons, I know it's tomorrow. I'm actually triple-checking.
They start on Friday. I don't have their opponent in front of me because I lost it.
It is. They are home to the Celtics.
Ah, all right. And the Celtics, by the way, kind of went into the All-Star break. A team in a skid, to say the least. They've kind of hit a wall a little bit. And so did the Pistons, by the way. Pistons went in losing three out of their last four.
Game and a half out of that final playoff spot as of this moment.
Yeah, so both those teams kind of skidding going in. And obviously they'll try to get their second half off on the right foot tomorrow. By the way, just because I'm on it, because I was looking at that Pistons schedule as well, Kush, a little reminder, that Reggie Jackson is making his way back. He has been cleared now for light running, according to the report from ESPN. And not clear as exactly when he'll be returning to the court, but certainly that would be a big boost for them to see how he pairs with Blake Griffin.
And not just how he pairs with Blake Griffin, provide that extra depth bench at point guard, which has been a shallow position for the Pistons. That's why they went out and made that small move, you know, on deadline day for Jameer Nelson reuniting with Stan Van.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So just a little Pistons note there. But a lot of other really interesting stuff in the montage there, including I'm going to kind of gloss over Michigan a little bit. We talked a lot of Michigan basketball this week already. Congratulations, by the way, to them for their win over Penn State, as they build now on their win over Ohio State and really kind of are kind of getting ahead of steam heading into the Big Ten tournament, which will start sometime next week. But, Kush, you had some hockey highlights in there. Going into the Olympics, I kind of expressed, well, let's just say a little bit less than enthusiasm,
right?
A little bit less than excitement, because I'm just not into winter sports that much. I don't skate or ski or any of those kinds of things, and you know, it's just not my thing. I can't tell you the difference between a slalom and What's the other one they do?
skeleton.
No. I'm just talking about the skiing.
Oh, the skiing.
Yeah, the skiing. There's multiple skiing events.
Yeah, like, downhill, slalom, ski jump. Those are the only ones I can name off the top of my head.
What the hell does that mean? One is downhill, one is slalom. Is slalom uphill?
I just remember that name, that word coming up. That's about it.
So you know about as much of it as I do.
And remember, I'm the one who always says, if you want to watch any Olympic sport, you should make it hockey.
Which is where I'm going with this segue. That's exactly what my point was. I don't know the difference between a slalom and a downhill and a super G and a combined, but they're all different skiing events, so it just doesn't, it's not my thing. But you said to me going into the Olympics, however, hockey might be worth watching. As it turns out, it kind of was, but not for the American men's team, correct?
Right. Yeah, that's strangely correct.
The men's team got bounced and they're not even in medal contention. Are they done? Are they just
done. They lost the quarterfinals. They're done.
So they're done.
They got nothing.
But last night, if memory serves, or if my, paying cursory attention to the Olympics serves, because I didn't watch it, but the U.S. women's team upset Canada and won the gold medal. And Canada had been on some kind of a 20-plus game winning streak in the Olympics, in the last several Olympics. They just have been dominating at a very, very high level. Do I have that right?
Basically, yeah. Basically, women's hockey, for what it's worth, is controlled by Canada first and foremost, then the U.S., then everybody else.
And Canada hasn't been touched, like I said, in several Olympics. Some 24 straight matches, I guess, or games that they have won, either in Olympics or maybe just in international competition altogether. I'm not exactly sure because, again, I just don't follow it that closely. Having said that, though, the women's team won yesterday against Canada, which is a huge upset. 38 years to the day, we are told. 38 years to the day that the men's team in 1980 in the Miracle on Ice beat the Soviets, which is just impossible to imagine how big that was. This doesn't rise to that because the women Canadian team isn't, it's not quite the level of what the Soviet team was back at that time, particularly with the height of the Cold War and everything else. And for all intents and purposes, the United States and Canada, are on pretty friendly terms. There wasn't like a political motive or political scene or whatever behind that one.
We weren't expected to win a bronze medal.
We're playing the best team in the world.
That was an incredible hockey team.
Big bad Russians, and they were really good. It was more than a hockey game.
We were playing for our country.
Here we go as the game is underway. The Soviet Union in red and the United States in white. Bud Snyder losing it after the point. Slap shot, and it was deflected in from the point. The Soviet Union takes a 1-0 lead. Pavlik taking it away to the U.S. Pavlik up ahead to Snyder. Slap shot goes in! Bud Snyder! That's the type of goal you don't expect somebody like Krenniak to give up. Long shot to the team by Krenniak. The shot to his ass!
U.S. team is depending a little bit too much now on Jim Craig. He's making too many good saves.
It's like, wow. Can we do this? Is this going to be real?
First thing you do, you look up at the clock and you go, there's too much time.
55 seconds, but Mikhailov has the puck. Mikhailov sweeping in, out in front. Goes wide. 37 seconds left in the game. Petrov with it. The Americans on top, 4-3. Long shot. Craig able to get a piece of it and sweep it away. Out in front of Krusov. And it looks like it hit the post. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
It's an event that touched the lives of so many other people. There aren't many sporting events that do that.
We caught them at the right time. We're a lot better than people gave us credit for.
The fact that we were able to beat that team that day in that setting, to me, was a miracle.
It wasn't just a miracle. It was impossible. Impossible. I was 13 years old when that happened. Mm. And I remember it like anything. Jim, is it the most iconic sporting event, result, moment? I mean, maybe in American sports history. And I don't mean Olympic history. I mean sports. I mean, the Jets beat the Colts in Super Bowl III behind Namath's guarantee. It was an incredible moment.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a World Series. The shot heard around the world. Bobby Thompson. There are Bill Mazeroski. beating the Yankees. There are moments in baseball that are iconic. There are moments in football that are iconic. I'm trying to think of a boxing match, you know, the moment that, you know, Ali knocked out George Foreman to reclaim his title, or maybe the thrill in Manila, the third fight between him and Frazier. Those were seminal, iconic moments in sports history that people who watch them will never forget. But there's none, I don't think, right? There's none that rivals the Miracle on Ice because of not just what you just heard, some of the players there reacting. 38 years ago, by the way, today, February 22nd, 1980, 38 years ago, this happened. And as they were just, you know, recalling it, it wasn't just a sport thing. It was our country against their country. Yeah. It was good versus evil. It was, you know, free America versus communist, totalitarian dictatorship, evil Russia. The evil empire. I mean, it was all of
them. I could throw one that has everything to just do with sports, kind of linking it to my disgust with this Olympics with no NHL players. That 1980 team was very much like the U.S.-type team that was out there in Korea this year. No, you know, big-time pros, where we know the Soviets guys were basically pros.
But not this year.
Well, actually, this year there was a former Red Wing that was playing for the Russian team because he doesn't play in the NHL anymore.
I understood, but what I meant by that is the entire team. Back then, in the Cold War era, under Soviet control, when they were still the Soviet bloc, okay, before the Berlin Wall came down and Russia returned to being Russia, and it was really the Soviet Union was all together, all of the Soviet bloc nations, they played for the government. They were professional players on the government team, on the national team. All they did was go around the world and play other teams like that. They were professionals, not just in the sense of like today's pros, you know, for the Blue Jackets, hey, I'm a pro hockey player. They were professional players for the regime. You know what I mean? For the Soviet government. And they were untouchable. And this is all they did.
Wasn't there an exhibition right before those 1980 Olympics where the Soviets beat the same two teams played each other?
They beat
it was
like
10-0 or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it was like 10-0, wasn't it? It was like 10-0. I mean,
it was double digits to either 1 or 0. That
I
remember.
It was 10-0, Jim, which is, of course, and hockey fans know this. I'm not giving you spilling any secrets here, but that would be like winning a football game 84-0.
Right.
It's just incredible. And so what these group of college kids did that night was something that just it defied belief. You know, they call it a miracle because of Al Michaels. But it was more than a miracle. It was impossible. We saw the impossible happen. It's just not possible for a ragtag group of college kids who had practiced together for a month to go out there and beat the professional world champions, if you will.
And they were always winning gold because of the way that the Soviet constructed the team, as you described. They literally won gold like the four Olympics before that.
I mean, because they literally had the best player at every position in the world on their team. I mean, it was just an amazing thing. Anyway, I'm getting off of the subject here because it's nostalgia that I just love. But last night, the women's team, again, when you consider the time difference, that's why we can say it's 38 years to the day. Last night, meaning, you know, today. February 22nd, 2018, the women's team beat Canada to stop their long winning streak. So, obviously not quite the same impact, but still pretty historic. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because of what you just played in the montage there, Jim, which was goal after goal after goal and shot after shot after shot in the shootout. They decided the gold medal in a hockey championship game, in an Olympic championship game, the gold medal game, not by continuing to play hockey, but based on having a field goal contest. Like bringing out a football team's kicker and say, you're going from the 40, and then if the other guy makes his 40, then you're going from the 45. We're going to keep backing it up until one of you misses. Now, it's not exactly that, because you do have a goalie in front of you, but you understand the point. All of the other parts that make up hockey were omitted for a shootout. Team hockey, going team against team, going five against five, it became a series of one-on-one matchups. A series of one-on-ones where it's no longer a team sport, it's an individual sport. And I got to tell you, and they debated this, I thought, very well today, again on Golic and Wingo, talking about whether or not that is more exciting in a shootout or actually having that goal come while still playing hockey in an extra period. Another, and even if it has to be a third or a fourth period. And I was listening to Mike Golic Jr. talk about this, and he said this is way more exciting because it's, you know, it brings out the one-on-one where one person rises to the occasion and either makes that great save to win the game or finishes and makes that great shootout shot to win the game. And my response to that was, I didn't need to hear Golic Sr. or Trey's response to that, Jim, was, how can that possibly be more exciting than a goal that is scored in the contest and in the context of actual hockey? The difference, of course, being that in the shootout, you know somebody is going to win or lose on this shot. If somebody has a lead and they're down to the last shot, if there's a save, or I'm sorry, if the goalie's team has the lead, a save wins the match. And if it's a tie game and it's a last shot for the team that is shooting, this goal wins the match. We know it's coming. So there is a sense of, we knew it was coming, and therefore it wasn't as spontaneous and exciting as, we are in the sixth minute of this extra period, and here comes a power play, shot deflected, rebound goes out toward the blue line, and shoots, he scores. You don't know it's coming. There is nothing more exciting than a hockey goal in overtime that you don't know is coming. Whereas you know the shot is coming, and you know either the goal or the save is coming that is going to win the event right now in the shootout. My point is, why do we continue to ruin tremendous games and contests with manufactured versions of ways to end the games? Like shootouts in hockey, like shootouts in soccer. Not that I care about soccer anyway, they can go do what they want to do. But why do they ruin the sport and turn it into a one-on-one matchup, Pishlin?
Well, you know, referencing back to what Golic Jr. more or less said. Okay, sure, it's exciting if you have no attention span. That's what it is. Seriously. Because that's why, to me, the best way that it's always been handled, in any of, just sticking to hockey real quick, the best way it's always been handled is Stanley Cup playoff overtime. You play a regular, normal length overtime, and we keep going until somebody actually scores.
Bingo.
And that's how they, you know, they should do those kind of things. Yes, I guess technically speaking, on some level, the concept of a shootout is exciting, but it means you have no attention span. Because I've actually sat in the past, Bob, through 4.5 to almost 5 hour triple overtime Stanley Cup games before somebody finally scored that next goal to win the game. Normal hockey game that doesn't go to overtime is about 2.5, right? So it's an attention span thing. And I guess nobody nowadays wants to sit through maybe 2 extra hours to get to the game winner.
See, and that is, to me, a sign of somebody who, quite frankly, does not understand sports. They don't understand the nature of competition. If you can't sit through more hockey, not knowing what second the game-winning goal is going to be scored, as you pointed out, that's an attention span thing, that you're not on the edge of your seat knowing that the moment there's a breakdown in the defense, the moment a goalie slips, the moment that there's a rebound nobody expected goes to the right place, the moment it goes just off the glove, the moment the skate save just, you know, isn't quite, quite there quick enough, or whatever the case might be, if you're not excited about that, then you're just not excited about the next pitch might be the walk-off home run. If you're not excited about that, then you're not excited about 3 seconds left, inbounding from half court. The greatest player in the world is going to take this shot. It's either going to be a victory or a loss. He's down one. He needs this. Or he's down two, and he needs this to either win or lose. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see a manufactured, ginned up, you know, let's take turns shooting contest. In the same way, I don't like the college football 25-yard line in nonsense. Play football. Offense, defense, special teams, punting game, kicking game, everything is in play. You play until there's a winner. You play 5 extra minutes until there's a winner. You play 6 extra minutes, or in hockey, it's sudden death. You play the contest with another period until there's a winner. So congratulations. That's all I'm saying. Congrats to the women, first of all. Very happy for them. That's very exciting that they won, especially beating Canada and snapping their long winning streak. They've just been owning international hockey for such a long time, the Canadian women. So congrats to the U.S. women. But that 3-2 win, to me, they're calling it a thrilling shootout win in Pyeongchang. To me, it was an anticlimactic win because it was a shootout win as opposed to a regular hockey, regular time hockey win. And I guess that's the only way I can phrase it. How many shootouts shots does each team get in a shootout?
You get five each, and if it's still tied, it just keeps going.
They get five each.
And I know they went into the it keeps going. I think they were on like shot six or seven when it was finalized.
And I'm not saying it's not dramatic. It's not exciting. It is, especially if you're, oh, my God, each side has had five and we're still tied, so now we're going another round. It is exciting. I'm not saying it's not, but it's not as exciting as if there's a forecheck and there's a great pass and somebody's out in front and it's one-on-one with the goalie because you beat the defense, not because you've been given the puck right from the goalie with nobody else around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the one-on-one I want to see in the context of the game, not in a manufactured setting. So congrats to the women. Proud of you guys. Happy for Team USA. Oorah, that's fantastic, but not a fan of the shootout. I want to know if anybody else feels that way. 866-240-1065. Let's get wild, Jim.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. Expansion teams don't have to suck, do they? Don't tell that to the Cleveland Browns, who have still been expansion sucking since 1999. But the Vegas Golden Knights yesterday clinched a winning record for the season, making them the first expansion team in any of the four major North American pro sports to have a winning record in their inaugural season. And oh, by the way, it's not just a winning record right now. They lead the entire NHL with 84 points.
How about that?
The Vegas Golden Knights. That is about as wild of a wild
stat. An expansion team could win the President's Trophy. That's insane.
Crazy. That's just crazy. And I love it. And I'm glad you brought it up. It's a great wild stat. Your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. Let's get about it in our local sports center. Come back, talk a little bit more about shootouts, NBA, and more coming up right here on the Ticket.
Answer right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
There's a need, 866-240-1065, the number to join us. You want to get in this half hour, it's a good time to do it between now and 4 o'clock because coming up at 4:10, we're going to talk a little high school basketball, and I'm going to kind of keep it a secret as to what we're going to be talking. It's not our regular weekly interview with Bill Clark about, you know, weekend matchups. That comes tomorrow, exactly, looking ahead to sectional matchups and the tournament and all that sort of thing. There's going to be there's one school we're going to spotlight, one local school we're going to spotlight at 4:10. I'm not going to tell you who it is. Got to listen. I think you'll like it. I really do. I'm looking forward to the conversation. So that'll be at about 4:10. You don't want to miss that after the top of the hour local sports center. We'll tell you why we're talking about that one school at that time. Secondly, at about 4:40 or 4:45, my voice holding out, and I stop coughing into the microphone every 2 seconds, we're going to have Todd Kowalczyk, the head coach, beg your pardon, of the UT Rockets. Rockets have a little bit of a slide here. We've been, you know, praising them because they've just been destroying it for the better part of the last month and a half. Big winning streaks, even losses are followed by more winning streaks. Now they've hit a bit of a skid here. Two losses in a row, Ball State and Eastern Michigan tripped them up. Now they've got a nationally televised game on the CBS Sports Network on Friday, tomorrow at 6:30. And then they've got Northern and Eastern again. Before the end of their regular season, we can start talking about MAC play. But their lead in the MAC West has shrunken to one. They had a three-game lead as recently as a week ago, Kush. Now they just have a one-game lead over Ball State. Rockets 11-4 in conference, Ball State at 10-5.
Yeah, about the only positive I could think there is Buffalo's been losing too, so they're somehow only a game behind them.
That's right. Buffalo is now 12-3 because they hit a little bit of a skid too. They lost two out of their last four, including one to Miami just a couple of nights ago. So, anyway, Todd Kowalczyk and the Rockets, that'll be coming up at about 4:40 as we talk about MAC basketball. For now, let's talk to Sean, who's calling us from Haskins, wants to talk about this hockey shootout thing. Am I being too hard on this thing, Sean? Was it just as exciting with the shootout as it would be if they were playing regular hockey?
To be honest with you, there are certain places where the shootout needs to take place, like the NHL regular season.
Okay.
But any time that you're playing a playoff or to try to win something, it needs to be just played out. The game just needs to be fully played out.
I like that a lot. Making a distinction between playoffs and regular season. Regular season, you don't want to be playing seven periods if nobody scores. Let's just get this thing over with. But if you're in the playoffs, you've got to play as long as it takes to decide a winner based on the rules of the game, not on specialty gimmicks, right?
Right. And, I mean, I've talked to a lot of fans about, like, the most, like, the best, like, playoff format.
Right.
And everybody says that it's like the hockey playoff format because it keeps you on the edge of your seat. Like, anything that happens can be the game winner, you know?
Exactly. That's the thing about it. You know, it's funny because I talk to people all the time, just in a general sense, forget about playoffs and or extra periods, whatever the case might be, but just, you know, baseball versus soccer. Whenever I rip soccer for being boring because it's so low scoring, people will say to me, well, baseball is about the same. You know, is a 2-1 baseball game boring as much as a 2-1 soccer game is? And my response is, maybe, depending on the pace of play, which is another subject. But the thing with baseball is every pitch, every time the ball leaves the pitcher's hand, unless it's an intentional walk, there's a chance that the game's about to be tied or a run is about to be scored. One swing is all it takes. You don't have every single boot of the ball being a shot on goal in soccer or in hockey for that matter. So to me, it's the drama knowing, well, not knowing when that moment is going to happen that makes it more exciting, both in baseball and, as you're talking about, in playoff hockey.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I'm a Penguins fan, so I've gone through, like, the last two seasons watching them in the playoffs, and they've gone through so many overtime games. There is no more exhilarating feeling than seeing them win, and then there's no worse back-breaking feeling than seeing them lose in overtime.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm not a Penguins fan because I don't really root for anybody. But I agree with you. There is something to that. And you know, it's funny because hockey fans, they know that their sport is more of a niche sport. Would you agree that, I mean, are you just a hockey fan or do you like everything?
No, I like everything, but
would you agree that hockey's more of a niche sport? It's a smaller but more passionate and loyal group of fans maybe than any other major sport?
Oh, yeah, I'd probably have to say so.
Yeah, I mean, ratings-wise, I think it proves it, right? When you look at ratings and you look at revenue and you look at popularity in that sense, it's not as popular as the other sports, but the passionate fans will always tell you that there is nothing like playoff hockey. And I can tell you, even going back to about, you know, 16 years ago when I was living out in California and doing radio out there, and I went to some San Jose Sharks playoff games, and I'm not, again, it's not my first, in fact, of the big four, it's my fourth sport. I'm a football, basketball, baseball, hockey guy in that order. But I will tell you, it's true. You don't even have to be, you know, a diehard Sharks fan or, in your case, a diehard Pens fan to be caught up in the edge of your seat, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, every time that puck moves down the ice and every time there's a check and every time there's a pass and every time there's somebody in the clear, it's like, oh, my God, here it comes. And whether it gets there or not, you just, you know, you just can't. You can't substitute anything for that, let alone some manufactured gimmicky shootout type of a situation.
Right. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's like 100% the reason why NHL doesn't do the shootout thing in the playoffs. I mean, that keeps the fans entertained. I mean,
I think not just fans being entertained, but I and again, I'm very much generalizing here, because I can't speak for any hockey players, but just knowing what we know about hockey players, I think they would punch themselves if they had to settle overtime or playoff games with shootouts.
Right.
I think, you know, I mean, they want to get to the fourth period, the fifth period, however many damn periods it takes. We're not, you know, these are guys that go out and get 17 stitches and two or three teeth knocked out, and they're back on the ice in 6 minutes. These guys don't like, you know, having things handed to them, such as here's a shot in the clear on the goalie one-on-one, and we'll take turns doing that for a while. These are just hard asses that want to play it until it's over, and they'll bleed and they'll sweat and they'll dehydrate and drop on the ice if that's what it takes to end the game the right way. And I just think they deserve that opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it just, I don't know. It's great for Team USA to win, but it kind of has like a veil over it with the whole,
yeah,
with the whole shootout. I mean,
yeah, like, I totally agree. I mean, you know, even going back, what's weird is, and I do not mean to make this sound in any way negative about the accomplishment, but when the 1999 women's team won the World Cup on penalty kicks, and it was Brandi Chastain, right? I think the one who ripped her shirt off after kicking the winning goal, I think. It was. But it's in I think that's what it is. But again, the fact that it was in a shootout scenario and not in live play made it so much different than what we just played for you in the last half hour, which is a replay of the 1980 Michael Ruzioni goal, which gave the Team USA their lead that Jim Craig then had to make hold up for the last couple of minutes. And that goal came, you didn't expect it, you know, you didn't even know there was a shot coming, and it's like, oh my God, Ruzioni scored. I knew Brandi Chastain was going to take a shot because they were doing a shootout. I knew last night, whatever the girls' names were, God bless them and congratulations to them, they were taking shots, and it was going to end in one way or the other because they were doing that. And I guess that's the difference, right? The unexpected moment of a score as opposed to, well, we know everybody's going to either score or go home right now because we're doing shootouts. And I guess that's the big difference.
Yeah, I mean, I just know from my own feeling that I would rather be on the edge of my seat at the end of the game seeing what's going to happen than just have it end like that. I mean,
amen. Amen. And you know what? I mean, you know, the best way I could say it is that would be like the NBA. You know, we're tied at 100, and, you know, we're going into overtime, and we're going to have one-on-one up to five, LeBron James against Kevin Durant. And then, you know what I mean? You know, we're doing everybody right. Step aside.
What are you talking about, guys? In the vein of shootouts and penalty kicks, they play a game of horse. Come on.
No, because I mean, the shootout at least is a one-on-one. Penalty kick thing is a one-on-one. It's one player against the goalie. So I'm willing to go one-on-one. But the thing is, they take turns, right? So it would be, you know, LeBron against Kevin Durant for the first point. And then it would be, I don't know, Tristan Thompson against Draymond Green or something for the second point and so on, and rotate through like that until somebody comes out ahead with their first 5 points. I'm making stuff up as I go along here, and it sounds stupid, and that's because what they do in reality is equally as stupid. And, well, that's where we'll have to leave it. Hey, Sean, thanks for the call, my friend. I appreciate the conversation.
All right. Have a good one.
Yeah, you know what I mean, Jim? We would be like, how would something like that look? And, of course, that depends on the new Cavaliers lineup when it gets down to it. But can you imagine the NBA Finals? We'll just kind of compare for the sake of this conversation to the gold medal game yesterday. Gold medal championship, NBA championship, right? And starting it off for the first one-on-one, score or no score, it'll be Steph Curry going one-on-one with George Hill. Then Cavaliers two-guard J.R. Smith will try to score on Warriors two-guard Klay Thompson. Then LeBron James and Kevin Durant. Then Kevin Love against Draymond Green. Then, what, Tristan Thompson or Larry Nance Jr. against? Who am I missing? Who's the fifth starter for the Warriors these days? And maybe they rotate that around a little bit.
Zaza Pachulia.
There you go. Tristan against Zaza for the NBA championship. Now, because, Jim, that's what it would be like. That would, because it would just be a rotation. The one through the five. The championship would be decided by Tristan Thompson and Zaza Pachulia. Last night, the gold medal was decided by whoever the hell that was who made that triple deke move to beat the Canadian goalie. Those two were the only two who decided the gold medal then. And that's silly, because it should be the entire team that decides it in regular play. That's the best and worst analogy I think that I can make. All right, you know what I do like, though, Jim, is segues. And the fact that we were talking hockey this segment is a good thing, because I have hockey tickets sitting here just waiting to be given away. We have got the Walleye taking on Greenville at the Huntington Center on Sunday, right? Sunday at 5:15. Sunday, 5:15, puck drop. You want to go see the Toledo Walleye, we will hook you up. I cannot promise you how they will settle the tie scores at the end of the third period or an overtime session, but I'm sure you will enjoy it nonetheless. Walleye in Greenville, if you want to go, be caller number 6 this time at 866-240-1065. And then on the other side of our top of the hour sports center, I told you we're going to talk a little high school basketball. But we're not going to just discuss all of the teams in the area that we always do with Bill Clark on Fridays. That will be tomorrow. We're going to spotlight one high school for one particular reason, just because it's kind of a cool accomplishment and story. You don't know which high school it is. You will when you come back, or when we come right back at about 4:10 after the top of the hour local sports center. So stay tuned for that. And then UT Hoops with Coach Todd Kowalczyk coming up as well. That'll be at about 4:40 in hour number two of the extravaganza.
Julian Moore couldn't save it. Whoa, Jordan Poole! These two teams still shuffling, proceeding. Robinson for credit Mo Wagner with getting on the ground, and that leads to Jordan Poole.
Beeline is making Penn State think, and they're thinking well.
Abdul-Rahman, bad pass off the inbounds, and Xavier Simpson takes advantage as Michigan comes in and gets a big road win at Penn State.
First shooter for the United States, Gigi Martin, scores, and the pride of War Road, Minnesota, puts it to the back of the net. Augusta shoots, scores. Yahoo, Deets, and scores. That's the Peter Forsberg move. He's in the building, Pierre. Amanda Kessel for the United States. Zabados cuts down the angle. Kessel scores! You go round by round. Jocelyn Lamoureux. Two goals apiece in the shootout. Lamoureux moving in on Zabados. She beats and scores! Must beat Rooney to keep Canada's hopes alive. She is stuck! The United States wins gold in Pyeongchang!
This is a fan issue. Okay, our research shows it. Our broadcasters have done their own research. Their research is wholly supported. The number one thing that fans, avid, casual, identify about the game that they'd like to see change is an improvement in pace of play. And at the end of the day, we need to make all the constituencies in the game understand that pace of play is about the fans. And it's the fans that drive the engine that's Major League Baseball. I'm not sure that fines would be the penalty. Usually when a player disregards an umpire's direction, ejection is the more likely course of events there. I really have come to dislike the word tanking. I must tell you, our game has always been cyclical. I truly believe that all 30 of our franchises have a plan to win. And not everybody's going to win every year, and sometimes people win and realize that their plan, it may be a year away, it may be 2 years away, but everybody's out there trying to win. And I think it's a question of timing, and I think that the cycles that have always existed in baseball continue to exist today.
I think our league has been built the right way as far as when it comes to the postseason. It just changes the landscape of the history of the game. If you start messing with seedings, the playoffs, then you start talking about, well, if this team would have played this Western Conference team, what he would have, you know. So it's cool to mess around with an All-Star game. You know, we can, and we proved that you could do that, but let's not get too crazy about the playoffs.
He could legitimately have this opinion, but if he does and he wants to espouse it when asked about it, I think he really has to at least give a wink and a nod to the fact that the East is easier.
Bob Franz, Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Right back with you, hour number two of the Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. We're going to talk a little basketball. In fact, we're going to talk a lot of basketball in this hour. Coming up at about 4:40 or so, College Hoops. It's our regular weekly visit with Coach Todd Kowalczyk of the University of Toledo. But now we're going to talk a little high school. That's normally something we wait until Friday to do with our friend Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan. But now we have a little bit of a special interview to conduct with the coach of the record-setting, history-making Oregon Cardinals stretch team that finished tack play, or that is at least 13-0 in tack play, 20-1 overall, and that 13-0 record guarantees Cardinal Stritch, the first TAC title in school history. That is outstanding. What a big, big deal for them. And joining us now is Coach Jamie Kaczmarek, the head coach and also the assistant athletic director at Cardinal Stritch. And, Coach, thanks for your time today. How are you?
I appreciate you guys having us on. It's great. It's nice listening to you talk about our accomplishments.
Well, you know, it's a great thing. You know, I'm a small school guy myself. I graduated from a Division III school myself. My son is currently in a Division III school, and I really like seeing stories like this. You know, there are big D1 private schools, Catholic schools, or you know, other non-public schools, and it's a little bit easier for them from time to time, but it's hard when you have smaller numbers of boys to choose from, athletes to come out of a class and do great things. And this particular group, that you have now at Cardinal Stritch has done something you've never done in school history. How does that feel to be a part of something that has got to be so special to each and every one of those kids?
You know, it's great. I took over this program 4 years ago, and I was blessed when I walked in. We had a senior by the name of Austin Adams who plays at Tiffin University now, and they kind of laid the foundation. They wanted to win, and they hadn't had much success previous, and they kind of laid the foundation. We had 19 wins that year. And then it helped to get some interest to have other young athletes around the Toledo area come to Cardinal Stritch. And we have built over the last 3 years, you know, guys wanting to come here and work hard on their game. And it's great to watch these kids. You know, we're young still. We have five seniors, but a bulk of our team is juniors and sophomores. So it's great because the future even looks brighter.
So how did you know, I can tell you that you're right. I'm sure the future looks brighter because you got young players right now who are on this 20-1 team, and we'll talk about what you have left in the regular season in a moment and look ahead maybe to the tournament. But the future looks bright. But what I want to do is go back 4 years ago when you took over this team, and you had to try to, you know, market the school. And I have to use that word, you know, market, because, you know, there's no recruiting that is allowed for high school sports,
right,
obviously. But, again, I'm a Catholic school graduate, so I know you have to market to everybody and hope you get some kids who want to come there and want to play play basketball there. So without having the success you have now, which should bode very well for the future, not only with the guys you have, but other 7th and 8th graders in the area who may say, you know what, I want to be a part of that. How did you do it 4 years ago when you didn't have that conference championship and that little history of success that you're building now to get these kids to buy in?
Well, you know, my background prior to coming here was I was a Division I college basketball coach for 16 years. So being around, you know, I coached under some very good guys who have built programs, Buzz Peterson, Cliff Ellis, Jim O'Brien down at Ohio State, Rick Boyages at William & Mary. So I knew what it took to take teams that, when you take them over, the program's not where it needs to be and how to build it. And I kind of came with that same concept here. But the big thing is trying to find kids to come to Cardinal Stritch who love basketball and want to continue trying to play basketball after high school. And that was a big goal because with my background, I wanted to help kids try to get to basketball, get to the next level. And so now we do. We have kids in our program. Like I said, Austin Adams was here 4 years ago, was blessed to coach him, and he is now playing Division II, and he was a preseason all-conference guy, and he's put up great numbers. He just scored his 1,000th point in his junior year at Tiffin University. So he was a nice one to start with because he had the same hunger that I was looking for kids to come here. And now we've, you know, guys like Little Anderson, who you'll be talking to here, and Joey Hollifield are guys that are hungry that want to play after Cardinal Stritch, and those were the type of kids that I wanted to coach. And right now we have a team full of kids who are eager to try to work to play after high school.
We'll talk to those young men here in just a second, but take me back to what you just pointed out, your, you know, long distinguished career at the college level. What made you want to get into small Catholic high school coaching? Because that's got to be quite a different change
and
a different approach.
I don't really know if that was in my mindset here. You know, when I decided to get out of college, I have a 11-year-old son and an 8-year-old daughter, and it was more, you know, in college can be a grind, and you're on the road recruiting, and your travel's different. And, you know, it's time to just take a step back. I didn't want to miss, you know, my son was starting to play basketball and baseball, and my daughter's playing soccer, and you start to, you know, you gotta choose. Is it family? Because I didn't know a lot of guys who I was in the coaching ranks with that, you know, before they knew it, their kid was graduating high school, and they kind of missed everything, and I didn't want that. I grew up here in Rossford, Ohio, small town, and you know, family's close and all that, and I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything with my family. So when it came back to the area, I was helping out. I just kind of volunteered over at Perrysburg, and at that time the athletic director here was Craig Meinzer, and he called me and said, would you be interested? And I said, you know, I'll come and talk. So I came and talked and met with Father Eric Shield and met with different people on a committee, and you know, it was kind of something that intrigued me, and I always said if I was going to get into high school coaching, I wanted to do it at a Catholic high school, and Cardinal Stritch provided the opportunity, and I jumped at it. I ain't going to lie, a little bit had to do with that. I knew that they had a player that first year that was pretty good, so I knew there would be something to grow from there. And like I said, that year, We actually set the school record for most wins that year with 19, and it kind of just grew from there.
That's a great story. We're talking with the head basketball coach at Cardinal Stritch. The Cardinals 13-0 in the TAC, 20-1 overall. This is their first conference championship in school history. Jamie Kaczmarek is our guest. Coach, you do have a couple of players alongside you there. Tell me who you're talking to, who we're talking with.
Yeah, we have our sophomore, Joey Hollifield, who was just honored by being named the player of the year in the TAC in our conference, and also first-team all-district. And then we also have Little Anderson, who is a junior, who was just named second-team all-league and honorable mention all-district. So two guys who are very important. Joey's leading us in scoring, getting close to 17 a game, and Little's averaging just over 11 points a game, but he leads us in rebounds with over 7 a game. So two big contributors. We have another junior, Jordan Burton, who's averaging over 14 points a game. So they're kind of the backcourt, the three-headed monster that really leads our team. But, you know, these two guys, we wouldn't be anywhere near being 20-1 without these two.
Well, let's talk a little bit to these guys, starting with you, Joey. First of all, you're a sophomore. You're not supposed to be leading varsity teams in scoring, especially when they're 20-1. You realize that, right?
Yes, sir.
You're way ahead of yourself there, young man. No, congratulations to you. Did you envision this? I mean, I don't know what you did your freshman year. I assume you played some JV last year, or were you on the varsity last year too?
I was on the varsity team.
Okay. Did you envision coming in as a sophomore and saying, you know what, I'm gonna, you know, lead this team in scoring. I'm gonna have to share, or I'm gonna have to carry that part of the load in order for our team to be successful. Did you know that you were gonna have to be that guy?
No.
What was your approach coming into this season, Joey?
Just to help the team and do what I got to do to help us win.
And so, like, do your guys in crunch time, or you know, with you know, the end of a quarter, the end of a half, or certainly at the end of a game if it's a close game, do your guys know that they want the ball in your hands, or do you take that from take that on yourself and say, get it to me, and you get out of the way, or is it pretty much spread out throughout the guys on the court?
Just like we have Little and Jordan, so I mean, it's not just me. They can make the big shot when we needed to.
Yeah, it does sound like you have some balanced scoring. You might be in the lead with that nearly 17, like your coach just said. But let me talk to Little now. Little Anderson averaged about 11 and 7 rebounds a game as a junior. Little, let me ask you the same question I just asked him. Coming into the season, did you have an expectation that this is where you guys would be, that you had a chance to do something very special here?
I knew that we could be good. It just was going to take a hard work from the start of the season.
And tell me about your own personal accomplishments thus far. And by the way, guys, I certainly don't mean to make it sound like the season is over. You guys have a lot of work left to do. You have a big tournament in front of you, sectionals and districts, and we'll talk about how far you went last year, and you want to go further than that this year. But Little, based on just where we are now, you've got one regular season game left. How do you feel about your performance? Is this what you expected out of yourself, to be leading the team in rebounding and being one of the top two or three scorers?
I knew I was a player. I knew I was going to be good, but I didn't know that I was going to lead in rebounds and average this many points. I just knew I was going to contribute to the team and help us win.
That's a good attitude to have. If you just turned on your radio, we are celebrating a kind of a cool little milestone for Cardinal Stritch, their first TAC title, first conference title in school history. Jamie Kaczmarek is the head coach, Little Anderson, a junior, and Joey Hollifield, a sophomore, with us. And Jim Cushlin is alongside me, you guys. And Jimmy, go ahead.
And you know, getting back to you, Coach, one thing that also jumps out at me is not just what you were describing a few moments ago of when you came and took over this program, but this outstanding season. And we still got a lot left with the tournament and such is coming up for you guys in Division III. But it's a little bit building on what we saw last year, a very successful season a season ago, saw a loss in the regional semifinals. Everybody else then gains a year of that kind of experience as you go along. How nice is it to be able to, you know, build off what you guys were able to do this year, carry it, and clearly, seemingly take a next step this season?
Going off of last year when we got in that locker room after losing at regionals, these guys were young. Joey was a freshman, Little Jordan Burton were sophomores, and the guys that are seniors now are juniors, and I think they knew what that taste felt like, and it was a little bit of a, a reality check. I think we were okay with making it to regionals, but once it was done, I think these guys knew that we were close, and you're only two wins away from getting, you know, possibly down to Columbus. And it made them hungry, and it made them hungry in the off season and the workouts and us getting in the weight room, and everybody got bigger and thicker. And, you know, that our focus has been a lot on the postseason. One of the big things this year, you know, we were preseason picked to win the league, and I was talking about X's on their back, and I actually taped up red X's throughout our locker room and the hallway leading to our locker room that they got to touch every day. And I told them it's going to be a challenge throughout the year because you're going to get everyone's best shot when you're picked on top. And they've answered that call. We had one letdown against Toledo Central Catholic over Christmas. We were winning after three quarters, and we just didn't close out the game. We played a not-so-good fourth quarter, and I think that actually helped us realize that, hey, these teams aren't just going to fold over and roll over for you when you walk in the gym. And it's been a hard grind. They've stepped up to the challenges. And now we have one game left tomorrow against Northwood here to hopefully finish out the season 21-1 and 14-0 in the league, which will be a huge accomplishment. And we'll celebrate it tomorrow night, but then it's time to get focused again because of the fun. And I think a little bit of my college history, my focus has always been on the postseason. As you know, in college, you know, you can win league and win league titles, but everybody wants the big dance and getting to the big dance, and that's what gets you contract extensions and all that. So my mindset's a little bit different. So I'm always talking to these guys about March and what it means and what it means for a school if you can make long runs, what they've seen last year by the backing of the support that the Cardinal Stritch fans give us throughout the sectionals, districts, and getting to regionals. And so it's a big focus for us. But our district is tough. Archbold, who we lost to in regionals last year, is now in our district. Genoa, who we beat in the district last year in overtime, is in our district as well. So it's not going to be easy. And, you know, we're going to have to step up to that challenge because going into it, when you have a record of maybe, you know, hopefully only one loss, everybody's going to want to be knocking you off.
Let me go back to Joey Hollifield. Joey, what did you think of those red X's that the coach put all over the locker room, reminding you guys you are the targeted now? You know, it's a little bit different when you're coming out of, I don't want to say out of nowhere last year, but, you know, maybe unexpected going 21-5 and making it all the way to the regional semis. And as your coach just said, you were the favorites coming in, you know, league favorites coming into the season, and that meant you did have that target on your backs. How did that feel? Did you like being the hunted and knowing that everybody realizes how good you are and they're gonna you know, give you their best shot every week?
It's fine. It just makes us work harder, and it's helping our team out a lot.
What about you, Little? Did you like being targeted? Did you like the fact that Coach told you guys, you know, right out of the gate, people are coming for you now? They're not just looking past you or not even aware of you because you guys had such a good year last year?
Yeah, those X's, they mean a lot. It just reminds us every day not to take no days off.
And that is good advice indeed. Guys, let me ask you this. What was your goal? And you don't have to answer because Coach is standing right there with you or sitting right there with you. But did you have a goal coming into this season in terms of where this season needed to be for you? In other words, you lost in the regional semis. Your coach just pointed out you were two wins away from Columbus. Did you have a goal coming in a little that you wanted to make it to the state tournament this year? Do you have to get to Columbus for this to be a successful goal, you know, achieving season?
Yes.
So Columbus is your goal. What about you, Joey? Was that pretty much a thing? Is that a personal goal, or is that something you guys decided as a team that's where we have to be?
That's a team goal.
That's a team goal, is to get to Columbus. And that's pretty aspirational, Coach. You know, I mean, you especially with a bunch of young guys. It'd be one thing if you were senior laden, but you rely on that many underclassmen and saying, guys, it's Columbus or bust. Not a bust, but you understand that's our goal here. If we really want to make sure we build on what we started last year and take that a step further, it's really, you know, that's a lot to ask of young guys, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, and we talk all the time. You kind of got almost three seasons in a year. You got the preseason. We're trying to figure out things. Got a lot of non-league games involved, and then you got your league season, and then you got your postseason. And I think, you know, so far we've met our goals for what we've done. You know, we still got one more game to play here at home. You know, we have little goals. We want to be undefeated on the road in the league. We want to be undefeated at home throughout the season. And we have an opportunity to have, we already accomplished the league on a road goal. And then tomorrow we have a chance to go undefeated at home, which would be another goal of ours. And then we can get to the postseason. So, you know, along the way, you're going to win a league championship, which is huge, especially for the school, the first one in history. To be honest, I didn't even realize that it was the first one in school history until about halfway through when the Toledo Blade was doing a newspaper article with me and said, you know, they've never won one there. And I'm like, well, hey, you would think that you mistakenly won one here and there. But, you know, but then, you know, they were in the Toledo City League. And when they were there, they had the likes of Jimmy Jackson playing here and Dennis Hobson. And,
yeah,
you know, the league was just full of talent. And they had some great teams that went to regionals. Stritch got to regionals a few times, but they weren't nowhere close to winning the City League, you know. But the talent was so big in the City League back then. So, you know, those goals, we just got to do little goals at a time. And then once this regular season's done, we're going to set little goals throughout the tournament. You got to win the sectional, and then from there we got to focus on the districts, and then you got to focus on getting their regionals. You can't just have the eye all the way down to Columbus, because everyone is going to be ready for you, and there's going to be some tough teams for us to try to get down there. But, you know, I'm happy that these young guys are eager to try to get down there, but it's going to take a lot of work, and you know, I'm looking forward to it.
No question about it. It will take a lot of work. Jim Cushman's got one more question for you guys. Go ahead, Jim.
And, you know, thinking about the conference you guys are in, especially when referencing the olden days, their coach in the old City League, you know, the TAC sometimes doesn't get as much pub as maybe it should, kind of, because it's usually made up of schools like yours, which are down in Division III, as opposed to the TRAC and the NLL and the City League, which are spread out amongst Division I and II. But as I've been talking in my conversations all this basketball season with our Voice High School Sports, Bill Clark, I keep coming back to, I'm rather impressed with the overall strength of the league. This year, the TAC was by no means a cupcake league. You had, you guys were in there. Genoa's pretty decent. Maumee Valley has had a good season. Talk to me about how good this league is, because sometimes I don't think it gets the press it deserves.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't realize we got two tremendous sophomores in this league, one with being Joey and the other one being Zeb Jackson, you know, and those two both have Division I offers. And, you know, Joey's been blessed to get an offer from University of Toledo and one from Kent State. I know Zeb's got one from Toledo, and I believe he's got one from Akron. And, you know, these guys, Youngstown State was just in our gym the other night looking at everyone. And, you know, Little and Jordan are starting to get a lot of attention as well. So, you know, this league has got talented players. There's a senior at Toledo Christian, Delano Smith, who has had a great year. And, you know, Toledo Christian has had a ton of success over the years. And so it's not a league that, you know, people look at it and it's, you know, small schools and all that. But it's talented. You know, Ottawa Hills has had teams over the years that have won, and they got guys playing Division I. So it's, if you were looking at it for producing Division I's and you were looking at the whole Toledo area probably over the last 5 or 6 years, I don't know if there's a league around here that's produced as many Division I's with, you know, the Ottawa Hills kids going. And then there's the big kid Ochoa from TC last year. He was gone Division II, and Austin Anos for us playing at Tiffin. There's just been a lot of talent in this league, and I think it gets overlooked. But you know what? It's fun being overlooked, because then when you get in a tournament, all of a sudden they start wondering, hey, who's this team and what league do they play in? So it was fun for us last year, but you know, this year I don't think we're sneaking up on anyone.
You know, that's interesting. I was just going to ask you that. You know, what's better, creeping up or knowing that, you know, the X, the red X, it's on your back. You know, you're not going to sneak up on anybody now. It's a lot more challenging when you head into this tournament as a favorite.
Yeah, and you know, it's good for these kids as they're growing. You know, it's for them to see both sides. Last year we snuck up on them because they are young. Now they're getting older and getting mature, and they got to handle the court and be on the court and be mature on the court, because now people are coming after you. And you know, maturity is a big thing. And I think these guys are growing up. They've grown up throughout this year and understand what it takes. And the big thing that we hang our hat on, and you know, and the old saying of defense wins championships, we defend. And I demand them to defend. And, you know, all the guys on our team are focused on defending. So the offense is going to come. We have talented kids that can put the ball in the hole. But, you know, the big grind for us is make sure that we're defending and rebounding. And that's what these guys have done. Jordan and Little are both, and Joey are, there's three very good defenders on the perimeter, and our big guys are solid inside. And so, you know, if we defend, we'll be ready for anyone's shot, hopefully.
Well, Coach, you know, as we wrap this up, I just want to kind of shine a spotlight on the two guys you got with you again real quick. Do a little mini bio. Let's tell everybody about you guys. Joey, your coach kind of leaked it a little bit when I was going to ask you if you had your eye on playing ball in college. You already have some offers, so that's obviously a yes. So let's talk about a couple of other things. Who's your favorite college basketball team, Joey?
Kentucky.
Kentucky? How come?
I love Coach Calipari.
Would that be a dream for you to play at Kentucky?
Yes.
And Little, what about you? Who's your favorite college basketball team?
I like Eastern Michigan.
Eastern Michigan. So you like a MAC team. How come? Why Eastern?
I don't know. I just like it. When I first seen it, I just fell in love with it.
Oh, that's very cool.
Now,
that's
you weird. Are aware you're going to have to play that hard, different press that they do, though, up there at Eastern, right? You get that, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, you better be proficient at zone defenses, too, if you're going to play at Eastern, because they do it differently than anybody else does. Joey, what about the NBA? Who you root for?
Cavs.
You're a Cavs fan? What about you, Little?
Celtics.
Man, you're all over the place. So you like Eastern Michigan, and you like, why do you like the Celtics?
I like Kyrie.
Oh, so it's a recent thing.
Green,
so last year you didn't like the Celtics.
The color green.
And you like the color green. Okay, that's fair. But a Little, what about last year before Kyrie went there? Who did you like then?
Cavs.
Cavs. So I'm going to assume then, Joey, since you're a Cavs fan, that your favorite player is?
LeBron.
And Little, your favorite player is Kyrie? All right, very good, very good. Well, listen, guys, I want to wish you the best of luck tomorrow in your finale against Northwood, regular season finale, that is, obviously. And then Coach Kaczmarek, second seeded in your district, if I'm not mistaken, sectional final. You're going to buy into the sectional final next Friday, Gibsonburg versus Lake. You'll take on the winner of that one, correct?
That is correct.
All right. Well, Coach, listen, thanks for celebrating your first ever conference championship with us for a few minutes here on the radio. I hope you have a whole hell of a lot more celebrations in store in the coming few weeks for you when you get into the state tournament. All right?
I appreciate you guys having us on. It's great.
It's a pleasure, Coach. Thank you. Good luck to you. Good luck, Joey. Good luck, Little.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks very much. All right, there you go. A little high school basketball spotlight on a very cool story. Cardinal Stritch, first ever conference championship. Now they move on. Obviously into, and they will move on after tomorrow's finale, into the sectionals and then hopefully getting to their goal of past districts and regionals and into the state tournament. All right, coming up, we've got a bottom of the hour local sports center coming your way. After that, we're going to go to college basketball as Coach Todd Kowalczyk of the UT Rockets will be joining us to talk about their nationally televised game tomorrow against Central and a little bit more. All of that coming up after I remind you that if you need a new roof, all you need is $1 down. Need new siding? $1 down. Need new windows? $1 down. Get a new look. Your choice. Roof, siding, or windows for $1 down. That's the power of 7 years interest-free. Don't delay. Call WeatherSeal today. Get the roof, siding, windows you've always wanted for $1 down. The number is 877-WINDOWS. Call WeatherSeal today at 877-WINDOWS. WeatherSeal. Online at weathersealhomeservices.com. And we're back right after this.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hey, back we are, final segment here of this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin now with you. You know, they have a 10-day DL. It's now 10 days, was 15 in baseball. Well, Bob's now on the 10-hour DL. You kind of heard off and on. He's still dealing with that nasty little cold. That's what happens when it goes from 30 to 70 to 30. Can't stop the coughing fits, so it is I, Jim Cushman, taking us home here on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Incidentally, I'll be coming up next when we switch gears to drive time. In for Mike Miller, he is north of the border on Hockey Simon. 4:46 now on a Thursday in February, and that means it's time to turn our attention to some college basketball. A bit of a struggling week for the Toledo Rockets. They've lost two straight, both on the road to a Ball State in Eastern Michigan. Still right now atop the West Division, but it's getting a little dicier as we're down to the final week and a half. Rockets back in action by the bye tomorrow night at Savage against Central Michigan. To help us break it all down once again, we welcome back in the head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Todd Kowalczyk, back with us on the program. Good afternoon, Coach. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. Great job on the intro music. Appreciate it, man.
Well, you requested it a couple of weeks ago, and I made a note of it, and I said, I'm going to make sure I get him some Super Tramp just for Coach. So we're going to be using that, and maybe I'll pick out a different one. I can always fumble around in our sister station's music library. They got plenty, so happy to help you out with that, Coach. Unlike Bob, who's a little ill right now, can't really necessarily, unless I'm missing something, use illness as an excuse for what happened. A couple of road games, a couple of defeats over the last week or so, back on Saturday at Ball State. And that's a key one because that's a sweep at the hands of the Ball State Cardinals, which means if this West Division goes into a tie, they would get the tiebreaker, and then a loss against Eastern Michigan and that that press they have. What happened, Coach?
Well, I think it's the Martell two different games. You know, against the Ball State one, we obviously, Morion Jackson did not play, and Jalen Sanford got, two fouls in the first minute 30 of the game. So now you're down, you're starting backcourt. That was a huge blow against a good team on the road, and then we go up to Eastern Michigan. I thought we played a really good first half, maybe. Should have had a little more than a lead than we did at halftime. But that game really came down to, two or three, possessions in the second half where, we either turned it over or, took a shot and just, at our transition defense, we had a little bit of flaw in the second half. And that was kind of the stretch of it, but we're fine, Jim. I mean, the tiebreaker's got no issue when you're talking about the division. And the tiebreaker only matters in the seeding of the conference tournament.
Touche. And you guys, clinched a spot at least straight to the queue, correct?
Yeah, we have. But our goal still isn't to win the West. Still, we're one game out of the regular season championship. Not the West, but the regular season. That's still our goal. Now, obviously, we need some help on that. Where had we won on Tuesday, we wouldn't need any help. We're also not in panic mode. We're a good basketball team. We believe in each other. Fact of the matter is we lost two road games that are combined 26-4 at home. Those are not bad teams we lost to by any stretch. And, certainly the Eastern Michigan game, certainly had chances to make plays to win that game down the stretch. Give them credit. I thought, Eastern Michigan may have played the best game they played all year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Those are two tough places, especially this season. Those are two tough places to play. I mean, Eastern up there in Ypsilanti with that press, and they're 17-11 overall, so that's pretty good and above 500 in the league. And then Ball State, who's one game behind you, and they're identical now. Overall records of 19-9, and you are correct, Coach. Yeah, only still one game out. It should be noted of the overall MAC regular season lead because Buffalo laid an egg a couple of nights ago against Miami to keep everything.
They didn't even lay an egg. They got beat by a good team on the road. They didn't lay an egg. They played well. Miami just played well. I mean, they didn't lay an egg. Miami's a really good team and a much improved team. Buffalo's good too, but a lot of good teams in our league.
And it's funny because all of that stuff put together, I know I've asked you this question a bunch of times over the times I've talked to you, Coach, but there it is once again. This conference, while nationally it may not be viewed as that strong, it's always been a decent league and a deep league where anybody can beat anybody else on a given night. And I think these are all examples of that once again.
I think anybody that, especially in mid-major basketball, would say this is clearly one of the best mid-major leagues year in, year out. There's two leagues that come to mind. It's the Missouri Valley and ours. This year, our league is ranked 11th out of 33 leagues in the RPI. The highest it's ever been ranked in the history is 10.
Yeah.
And that was in 2014. And one time in the early 2000s and one time I think in the 80s, and that the RPI goes back to the 70s. So, it's a good league. It's a competitive league. It's, now do we have any great teams? No, but we have some really good teams. And I think, Toledo is one of those really good teams, and so is Buffalo. And, You know, so is Ball State right now, so there's a lot of really good teams.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. There are plenty of good teams, as we know, you know, in this league. I just find it interesting that it all seems to happen, you know, all at once. We're talking with head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Todd Kowalczyk, here on the Extravaganza. Jim Kuslin filling in this final segment here on this Thursday edition for Bobby. I can't stop the coughing fit, so I'm taking over for him. You got Central Michigan coming up tomorrow night. First of two games on a Friday to finish out the season. You got this Friday, next Friday, and sandwiched in between, incidentally, will be at Northern Illinois on Tuesday. 6:30, by the way, folks, the tip-off time at Savage earlier this year, 93-82 up there in Mount Pleasant. Always different playing the same team a second time. What type of different adjustments when you're in a league play situation like this and you're getting that team for a second time, whether you beat them or lost to them in the first matchup, is there anything that's a little different based on that first matchup when you guys go to game plan and such?
Absolutely. I mean, there's things that you did well that you want to, you know, obviously try to do again, things maybe you'd like to try over and do better. But you just learn from, you know, the mistakes that you made, and I'm sure they're doing the same thing. But, you know, they're an improved team, and I think, you know, we're a team that has gotten consistently better this season as well. So, I mean, we got to do a really good job at guarding the three-point line, because that's an area that they traditionally are really, really good for the three-point line. And they're exceptional in transition. You know, they're going to press us. They're going to play a matchup zone. So we got to do a good job of beating the press and scoring against them, coming back and just really attacking the matchup the right way. It's not a zone like Eastern would play. It's a matchup zone, which is kind of a combination of man-to-man and zone. But they have some really good outside shooters, and some veteran guys that have played a lot of minutes for them. They start three seniors, who understand what it takes to win at this level. And, we're going to do a good job of guarding.
We're talking with head coach Todd Kowalczyk of the Toledo Rockets. Now, and when you guys have a little skid like this, and even though you laid out the reasons for what happened, you know, in each of those games, what do you as the head coach try to tell the guys to keep their confidence up? It sounds like, you know, they still are, and that's always a good thing. But from that coach's perspective, what do you tell guys when you get into situations like this, especially to make a streak not continue?
Just keep believing in each other. We've had a very good season. We're a good team. You know, we got to just keep believing each other and stay together. You know, we've had some injury issues that, you know, I think there's, I know Ohio's had some pretty good injuries this year. You know, and we've also had some injuries, you know, with Willie Jackson and Morion Jackson, but now we're, you know, getting back at the right time of full strength. Willie played tremendous, you know, in the last couple of games, and Morion, you know, just got back and didn't play a whole lot at Eastern Michigan like normally. I usually average 31 minutes a game, but look to him to be back to full strength, you know, tomorrow night.
And in that game tomorrow night, again, at Savage, Central Michigan coming to Savage, 6:30, the tip-off time. After that, it's at Northern Illinois, and then Eastern Michigan once again next Friday to close out the season. Coach, best of luck out there in these next couple of games. We'll catch up with you next week as we get ready for a season finale and then the MAC tournament after that. Best of luck out there, Coach.
Hey, Bob, good health. Appreciate you.
I will definitely pass that along to him as well. Head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Todd Kowalczyk, taking a few minutes. And, yeah, everybody's a little struggling right now at the tip-top of the MAC, despite the fact the Rockets only lead Ball State by a game in the West in the number two spot. They're only a game behind Buffalo, who lost to Miami the other day. So things getting a little jumbled up once again at the top of the Mid-American Conference. Quick timeout as we shift gears from the extravaganza to drive time. I'm in for Mike Billings, north of the border at Hockey Side. We'll talk some more college basketball, NBA resuming today. And I got thoughts on the whole tanking stuff we've all been hearing way, way too much about, not just for baseball this week, but basketball as well. I got some thoughts on all that. Stick around as we shift gears to drive time.
ESPN 106.5, the ticket right now traffic.
All looks good. No accident problems, no delays either. That is your right now traffic.
Looking for a new vehicle? Want more for your trade? Volkswagen in Perrysburg would like 10 minutes of your time to appraise your vehicle. We'll give you up to 120% of Kelley Blue Book value. You can take the cash and walk away or trade for a new vehicle. With 0% APR interest rates and 120% of Kelley Blue Book for your trade, why would you shop anywhere else? Volkswagen of Perrysburg is ranked number one in customer satisfaction and has the largest selection of new Volkswagens in Northwest Ohio. Save up to $10,000 off MSRP on all remaining 2017s. Drive a 2018 Jetta S for $89 a month. Better yet, how about the vehicle named Best Compact SUV, the 2018 Tiguan S for $125 a month? These deals won't last forever. Get to Volkswagen of Perrysburg, located within the only auto mall in Northwest Ohio, 26875 North Dixie Highway, Perrysburg, less than 15 minutes from downtown Toledo. Online 24/7 at VolkswagenofPerrysburg.com. 36 month lease, no security, with $24.95 due at inception, 10K miles per year, plus tax, tag, title, duck fee with approved credit.
Attention men, your prayers have been answered. There's a new store in the area that was literally opened just for you. His store, Cigars and More, is now open on Lewis Avenue in Temperance, Michigan. If you're